bunch of gamers, one channel, and tons of games. This must be Games and Me.
We are the Pixel and Polygon Protection Group, Episode 3 for May 5th, 2009. Link's Crazy Sex Life. Hey guys, we are the Pixel and Polygon Protection Group. This is episode 3 with Magus as usual. So, how's it going, Magus?
I'm just kicking it, really. You know, I was playing some Portal before this started, and, you know, it's all good.
Oh, that's awesome. So, that's what you're doing for Cinco de Mayo, huh?
Yep, we're playing Portal. You know, okay. crazy robots and such, you know, it celebrates the Independence Day of Mexico. No other way. You know, with crazy Gladys.
That's pretty cool. So how is, speaking of crazy robots, did you download the virtual on game that was released on Xbox Live last week?
I'm going to get some points tomorrow. Uh-huh. I did download the demo, and my arcade actually has a virtual on machine there.
Oh, really? You have an arcade?
Yep. In my town, it's been there. This arcade has been there since the mall was opened the 70s. And this mall, it's been there since I was a kid.
Oh, my God. No, I thought you had a personal arcade like Jumbo Junkie. I was like, whoa, you have an arcade? Damn.
Oh, no.
I was like, you're rolling in the dough, dude.
No. We do have a cool arcade, and I still visit there. It's just kind of sucks that some of the new games they get are like, you know, claw grab games and crap like that. And then the newest like video game machine they got it wasn't no Tekken 6 or Street Fighter 4. Guess what it was? Deal or No Deal.
What, Deal or No Deal, the arcade game?
Yep, they've got the Deal or No Deal video game, but they have this game that they've had for a couple years that I play consistently. It's called Let's Go Jungle.
Oh, what's that?
It's a Sega arcade game, and it's strange. It is completely strange.
Wait. How does it play?
You go on the safari. You go on the safari, and then you go with your girlfriend. So two players play. You know, one player plays the boyfriend, one player plays the girl. You know, the girlfriend or whatever, right?
Okay.
And then of course. Everything in the thing, it's like a Jurassic Park type thing because everything goes wrong. You get attacked by, giant spiders and shit. So it's a shooting game, right? Mm-hmm. But the better you work together, you know, the more your compatibility, you know, will be. And then there's some crazy quick time events and things like that. And it's just, it's fun as hell, simply put it that way.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. I didn't think that was a... You know, it's funny, like, while you were, like, describing that, it felt like a hack of the Jurassic Park game.
Might be.
Oh, jeez.
I guess, speaking of playing stuff, though, let's get to that. What have you been playing?
Oh, what have I been playing? Or rather, what have I not been playing? Well, if you want to talk about recent pickups also, I actually picked up Bleach Dark Souls this week. Because they are, you know, they're part of like the game day sale from GameStop that's been going on since the beginning of this month or last month rather, and yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. It's a fighting game on the DS, touch features. I have to play it more. But the other game that I got is actually Chrono Trigger. And Magus, you're probably gonna kill me, but this is the first time I'm actually playing through Chrono Trigger. Like sit down and like. Actually, like trying to beat it.
Well, see, you know, I have something to say, and you know, first time playing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In that, when I talk about my games, but yeah, what do you think of Chrono Trigger?
You know, it's so funny because it has aged so well, in my opinion, that I can still play it. Like I have no problems playing it. It's kind of funny because I bought the game with like. Some sort of hesitation, because I kind of figured, it's probably going to look like a Super Nintendo game, it's going to look very pixelated, it's going to look like crap, but you know what? The art on that game is superb. like, you know, when you go down, like, from your room. And mind you, I'm wondering, like, okay, you went down from your room. Where does your mom sleep? But I'm not going to get into that. So you went downstairs, and the detail in the kitchen, the living room, and that floor, I mean, oh my god, you don't see that level of detail even in today's games like Pokemon, you know, like
right.
games that look, you know, that similar to Chrono Trigger. And I was looking at the stove, and they carefully, like, adjusted the pixels so that you know that there's, like, four different, you know, like, you know, stove tops there. And I was like, oh my god, there's so much detail to this game. And of course, I played it, like, I only played it during lunchtime, like, yesterday. But my god, like, that game has some really crazy stuff. But, I mean, there's some things that obviously kind of are a giveaway for its age, like some of the effects that they have, but
mm-hmm.
that's, like, that's totally dismissible because the entire game is filled with so much, you know, minute detail, like going from the present to the past, seeing a lot of things change. It's certainly, like, I can see why people, like, regard it as, like, one of the best, you know, RPGs out there. And, you know, I think this is a testament to it. Yeah, it's a great game. But I have to qualify this, though. I have to qualify the reason why I'm only playing this for the first time. When I actually lived in a third world country before moving to the United States, like, and we didn't get American versions of games. We got Asian versions of games. And Chrono Trigger didn't even hit our end of, you know, Asia. It probably didn't even hit it at all. I mean, we had to import games from the United States, and that cost us a pretty penny. And in a third world country, you know, money is pretty sparse.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's what I've been playing. And, well, I told you last week that I tried, you know, personal trainer cooking. I haven't touched it since. But in terms of what I really want to get back into, Henry Hatsworth.
Oh,
I want to
yeah.
get back into that game, and I'm gonna save talking about that game when we go to your end. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. So how about you, dude?
Okay, well, I've been playing a lot of multiplayer. You know, I mean, I played everything from Team Fortress 2, Halo 3, Call of Duty 4, Left 4 Dead, and I'll talk a little bit about Left 4 Dead because I played the new stuff that came out recently.
Yeah, didn't they add, like, a new survival mode for that game?
It was free, and that survival mode code, let's simply put it, I'm going to put it bluntly. That survival mode is awesome, but it's a motherfucker.
Okay.
Holy shit. It is a motherfucker, and I say that because it's just so crazy, you know? Oh, you got to survive, and they just throw zombies at you. Zombies, zombies, zombies. It's just like a never-ending swarm, you know? And they even made a specific map for it, and we were playing on it. And that new map was the lighthouse, mm-hmm. and we were actually playing it on the lighthouse. So it was really cool. The that game, I don't know. Some people say they get bored of it, but I have it. I think Valve is fucking genius.
Well,
that.
It's like it the way that I kind of saw it. It's like, you know, there are competitors who love multiplayer, and there are people who only like the single player aspect. And I'll have to say this. I am a purely single player type person, and people may chastise me for that, but, you know, even in fighting games, I'm not that good with them. Help, you know, Ted will be, will attest to that. But, you know, when there are certain games like Left 4 Dead, or even, you know, I'll take it to, you know, to a game that's made in the past, Call of Duty 4. Call of Duty 4 made me interested in multiplayer games. And I think it's not because, like, I guess it has something to do with how powerful the single player experience is. And that's kind of the same way with me for Left 4 Dead, because, you know, when you play Left 4 Dead, you're not playing alone, you're playing it with somebody else. And of course, the reason why I got into the multiplayer in Call of Duty 4 was because the freaking story and the action scenes were, like, really great, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Left 4 Dead. The thing with, yeah, that game is just, I don't know. Oh, it's just so crazy because of the fact that you know, you just I don't know. You're absolutely right with what you said to an extent. You know, I like both, you know what I'm saying? I like both multiplayer and single player games, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing with that game is, it's like, you know, it's not a single player game in the least, I don't think, you know. That game, I don't like playing it with the bots.
You know, I have to agree, because like when I bought that game, I wanted it to have like 4-player split screen, because my TV is big enough. I have a 52-inch TV. But man, when we learned that you can only do 2-player split screen, we weren't really that phased, because you know what? We kind of, you know, like shoved it aside and lived with it, because we were still playing the game actively. And yeah, I totally agree. The freaking single player, if you're playing alone, is like stupidly boring.
Yeah, it's not fun. That's why that game is built for multiplayer. That's what it is. See, what Valve has done, I think, better than a lot of companies is, you know, gaming to me is you know, beyond gaming. It's like an immersive storytelling. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And what Valve has proven to me in the last few years especially is that they're a company that can tell very, very complex stories in a game brilliantly, right? Okay? Half-Life. The Half-Life series. But then they could, you know, and they make it immersive as hell, epic as hell. But then they turn around and then they'll make something just as immersive, but with not overly complicated, you know, storylines or anything like that. You know,
right.
Let's take a look at Portal and Team Fortress 2, because Portal, you know, you're Portal is what it is. You know, you actually feel emotion. You actually hate GLaDOS. You know, the companion cube, all that shit, you know? And it's not an overly complicated concept. And then the same with Team Fortress 2, you know? You're just, you know, you're playing a fortress game.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Left 4 Dead, you're surviving zombies. I mean, fuck, you don't need any backstory. It's just zombies, you know? And even if you were... That's the way I put it. You know, you don't, you know, if you're actually fucking worried about zombies, you know, coming at you, you're not going to care where they come from. You just want to blast them and get the hell out of there. And that's what Left 4 Dead does.
I was going to quote a book that I got for CK a long time ago. It's called First Person. And that one's actually a very interesting book. You should check it out. And of course, you know, for our listeners and stuff, you can check it out too. Well, what's fascinating about that book is that it approaches interactive entertainment, not just video games, so anything interactive, with a sense of, you know, academia. And one thing that I got from that, which was really fascinating, was that they were talking about how there really are different types of storytelling in a game. So, like, as an example, what you were telling me, like, with Half-Life and stuff, like, that's kind of, like, the story of the game itself. Like, that's the narrative that the game has. They call it narrative. And what's fascinating about that, that never changes, right? So, here, let me ask you this question to illustrate a point. What was the best situation or scenario you've ever had in Left 4 Dead?
Okay, there's a new map they added, which is a lighthouse.
Okay.
And what we did was, the reason we survived for so long, you know, I don't even know if 5 minutes is considered for so long, but the reason we survived the 5 minutes was because of the fact that, you know, we used propane tanks and, you know, gasoline tanks, and we formed barriers and we stayed on the top, and we were knocking zombies down before they would, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Before they would climb up, we were knocking them down, and It was just excellent teamwork, you know?
Right.
Because it's just like in real life, someone does something stupid, you get fucked, you know? And that's what we just had a well thought out plan, you know? And
yeah. We
even had someone with, you know, a sniper, I believe. No, is there a sniper rifle? The scope rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And they were taking out the smokers and shit, and it was pretty crazy.
Yeah. So that right there is what, you know, what that book calls like the player story, which is the story that you tell to somebody when you're done playing the game or something like that. Something that's completely different from anybody else's experience that only you experience, or maybe somebody else experienced along with you. Like you, like the way you were saying and describing, like, oh, I was setting up barricades. This guy was basically like setting up like all these, like, you know, like propane tanks all over the place, and we would shoot these. Yeah, that's
right.
That's essentially the player story right there.
And I remember that started happening. I remember when the GoldenEye came out,
mm-hmm,
on the N64, and all my friends were into it. I I was more of a PlayStation guy, you know.
Uh huh. Yeah.
During those days, but you know the whole thing with you know the N64 to me back then was the multiplayer console back then,
right.
And the thing with that was I remember people used to tell these crazy stories, and then I started playing GoldenEye, and we were all telling you know our own story. So it's been going around for years, and then when Halo 1 came out, I remember I had a friend who had two Xboxes,
right,
and we played. A lot of us didn't want to go to our senior prom, so we just stood and we played Halo. That sounds bad.
Wow, I didn't know that.
But we played Halo, and I remember we telling each other stories about that night, and then we came another time. It was just a whole other experience. And that's what's happening. You know, that's why stuff like when Halo 3, like the you know where you could record matches, is so fucking awesome too, or
yeah.
take screenshots.
Right.
So. I see your point about that too, and it even to an extent, you know. With I remember when Fallout 3 came out, you know, maybe the prologue people we were talking about our different experiences with how we handled some of the situations in the prologue.
That's exactly the player story. It's kind of like the different methods in which you kind of solve the problem, and that's kind of like what video games allow, and that's really the strength of this, you know, industry that we so love. It's like it's unbelievable the kind of stories you can tell. Like, you know, only in video games could you say that, okay, I killed about 2,000 zombies the next, then I turned off the system, and then I went and became like a, you know, a top hat wearing old man that turns into a robot when, you know, when and exclaims tea time or something like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of that game, have you been playing it?
Not that much. I don't
really?
Know why. Yeah,
so
you haven't
you haven't touched Henry Hatsworth since the last time we talked.
I kind of went NES lately. I went on a Zelda 2 Link's Adventure, which
what the hell?
Which,
why Zelda
which,
2, dude?
I don't know. I love that game. That's one of my favorite. I'll be honest. A lot of people probably crucify me for saying this, but I like it better than the original Zelda. Although I will say it is not my favorite Zelda game though. My favorite Zelda game is Link to the Past. I like it better. Ocarina is probably my third because I actually like Link's Awakening better than Ocarina of Time.
Oh, that's interesting. So tell me about Zelda 2 and why the hell you're playing that again.
You know, that was the first Zelda game I ever beaten. You know, because like I was telling you in the pre-show, the first Zelda, as great as that game is, it is cryptic as hell. Because, like you were saying, there's bad English in it. And there's, you know, there's a bad translation. And there's also, you know, the thing with Zelda 2 I liked about it was, you know, it still stands out from the rest of the series, you know? Because, mm-hmm. you know, you get experience points, you know, the way villages are designed, you know, it's kind of RPG-like, more so than the other games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you get experience points. You could level grind. It's kind of a crazy game, but the thing about that game I do want to talk about is you know this is hilarious is basically I will put this bluntly: Link gets laid to get health in that game.
Yes, I remember that.
You go into the villages and she said the lady goes, "You want to come into my house?" And then you go into the house and they don't show anything. It says, "This will make you feel better. Come on." And you know what they're dealing with.
And with the old lady, too. It's like,
yeah,
what?
The... what? Oh, shit. Yeah, you know what they're doing. But but aside from, you know, from the crazy, you know, Zelda 2 sex talk, we got to, you know, that whole game is just, I think it's a well-made game. I think it's... I mean, yeah. A lot of people knock on it, but I think it's the best NES Zelda game out
right.
of the two. But that's just me. And then one last thing before we go into we close this. I you know, like you said, you never played Chrono Trigger until recently. A few months back, I never played Shadow of the Colossus.
Whoa! What?
Well, I did a video. I don't even remember. Maybe October, November, around there, saying you know I never played Shadow of the Colossus, and then I finally got around to playing it. And then I, you know, for some reason, beat the first Colossus and never touched it again. And then finally went back to it and played it and beat the second. And I was like, wow. And that game's different. You know, we were talking about how to classify, you know, like, is it a boss battle game? Or is it a puzzle game? Or is it a platformer game? What is it?
Yeah, I consider it a platformer, but, you know, That's just me.
I don't know. It's just, it's epic. That's no denying that, though, I think, in my opinion. But
okay, but here, let's do this. Let's try to poll our listeners and see what they think Shadow of the Colossus is. And no cheating. So unless you've actually played it, like, respond to us. So if you can email us at tpppg@gamesn.me, let me give that. It's T for Ted, PPP as in Peter, G as in graveyard, @gamesn.me. Tell us, like, you think, like, you know, Shadow of the Colossus is a platformer? Is it a boss battle game? Is it, like, I don't know, a sports game, whatever? And rationalize, like, and tell us, like, why you think that way. That should be something interesting to read, right, Magus?
Yeah, that would, that'll be great for episode 4, I think, because, you know, we could figure out what the hell is Shadow of the Colossus. Please tell me what the hell Shadow of the Colossus is.
Okay, that's cool.
How about we take a break?
Do you need a break?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Okay, all right, let's take a break real quick, and then we'll be back.
All right, cool.
Hey, everyone, it's Tim McKay, Jumble Junkie, and join me on my podcast, Jumble Junkies. No, there's not more than one of me, there's just me. But I have my buddy Alex sitting with me, and it's going to be a good time. We have some games, we're going to talk about video games, we got some skits, and a whole bunch of good stuff. So check it out on Jumble Junkies.
All right, guys, we're back. So, Magus, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah, well, you know what? We're going to talk about game reviewers today. You know, about this whole, you know, what is it with them? Do they enjoy games, or does it have to be innovated? We kind of went into a tangent last week, but it didn't quite make it, so.
Yes, it didn't, because it extended our podcast from an hour to two.
Oh, wow. But you know what? It's these guys that, you know, these game reviewers that contradict themselves, and they're like, oh, well, we want innovation. You know, everything has to be innovative, you know. But I don't see that. I find games that aren't quote-unquote innovative to be fun. You know, and like hell, let's talk about Resident Evil 5. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that game. A lot of people knocked the shit out of it. Oh, well, it's, you know, more the same as Resident Evil 4. It's, you know, it sucks. It's, you know, it's not the same. The AI sucks. You know, it's not innovative, you know. And I thought it was fun. I liked it. You know what I used to? And I think at the Persona 3 review that I did, I started this, but I used to do a review score, but it's always was a pain in the ass to do because, you know, I don't know how to score this. You know, I really enjoyed the game, but it wasn't perfect. But, I mean, you know, it's still one of my favorite. You know what I'm saying? And I found out that score on the opposite end of scoring. So when I did, what was it, the Persona 3 review, I decided to scrap the scores in my game reviews on YouTube. And I'm probably going to do that with anime reviews and movie reviews and do like a recommended system, a system like you guys do, you know, for this group of people or something. But review scores just don't work for me anymore. And I mean, being on the opposite end of the spectrum, giving a review score, it's a pain in the ass. I think anyway. I don't know how, you know, GameSpot or IGN do it. You know, it kind of, you know, you're like, okay, we got to score all these points. You know, it's not overall whether you enjoyed it. And then the other problem I think with score is a little site called Metacritic, because I see way too many people on forums, you know, on any forum, you know, it could be any forum, buy games based on Metacritic scores. And that's just crazy.
Metacritic is not just a problem with us, you know, as buyers and stuff, but it's also a problem with people who make the games, like the publishers and developers, because being part of the industry and the kind of like the publisher end and stuff like that. I had firsthand experience of, like, you know, how games are getting slammed and stuff like that. And just the ridiculous nature of, like, the Metacritic score. It's not an end-all system. It's because, again, we have a number that basically represents whether the quality of the game is great or whether that person thought that the game is fun. Personally, if my whole thing is like, if you want to rate a game based off of innovation, then make that a separate score. And if you want to rate, you know, fun, rate that as a separate score too. Because I don't think that you can kind of satisfy both at the same time with just one score, which is why at some point, like, I was very partial to, like, the IGN review system, because I kind of figured, you know what, this wouldn't do any wrong and stuff. And then I came to the problem with Silent Hill Homecoming that they reviewed, and I basically disagreed with their review, because I found the storyline to be really enjoyable. And the only people that would really have been pissed off by Silent Hill is the fact that there are some aspects of it that were lacking, you know? So it didn't talk to me, personally.
I want to talk about Tales of Vesperia review. You know what a lot of critics knocked on in that game? Was the skit system, which was completely optional. When you played it, did you have a problem with the skit system?
I actually haven't gotten to that point, so you can. Why don't you explain that part?
You haven't. Well, you when you told me, you should have seen skits already. What they are is in the Tales games, the more recent ones too, like Symphonia and even in Vesperia and such. You play these little optional scenes. They're like little story sequences where they're kind of silly, but they add more depth to the storyline. You know what I'm saying? And they're optional. And You said you haven't seen any, right? But you were at that one part with the wolf and shit?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there had been skits already, but they're optional, though. You didn't even know they were in the game until I brought it out. But yet critics were complaining about that being the worst aspect. I'm like, you know, if you didn't know they were in the game, how, you know what I'm saying? How is that a problem?
Well, what were they saying about it specifically?
It bogged down the game. It slowed it down. It, you know...
Wow. And you didn't even know.
You didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
That's the hypocrisy with these game critics. You know what? Let's lay some waste into X-Play. Oh, well, Resident Evil 5, we'll give it 3 out of 5. They're entitled to it. You know, they're entitled to it, but don't be contradictory about it, because, you know, you say, well, Resident Evil 5 wasn't innovative. It was all hyped up, and it was, you know, but it wasn't innovative. So was Fable 2. Peter Molyneux spews his mouth all the fucking time about his games, you know? But you gave that game Game of the Year. I mean, okay, don't get me wrong. Fable 2 is fun. I still play that game. I like it a lot. I think it's enjoyable. It's fun to goof off on. It's a fun game. But it isn't, quote unquote, innovative. It's you know, it's a very improved Fable 1, you know what I'm saying? It is a sequel. It's not Fable 1.5. We've already seen that when Fable the Lost Chapters, but it is a Fable, you know, it is a sequel with added features. It just, you know, it's just not an innovative game. You know, we've seen it before. And I guess, you know, and it's the same thing. And this is another thing I'm going to get flack for. We were talking about this earlier too, was Little Big Planet. Great game, but not innovative. Because we've seen it does. Okay, this is what I'm going to say. It's not innovative. I don't think it is, because we've seen level designers before. Because that's what everyone talks about. You know, oh, it's the level design. I just think it's not innovative, but it does it the best than anyone else has ever done it. Because they really, you know, what's that studio called? I always forget their name. Yeah, Media Molecule. They always, you know, they support the game. They completely, you know, they're 100% into it. You know what I'm saying? And they support it, and they do it right. You know, they do it the best than I've seen in any level creator on a console. Okay, they do it right. They absolutely do it right. But it's not a new idea like everyone's, you know, proclaiming it is. Because we've seen level designers all the way back, Excitebike. So that's just my thoughts on it. I'm not saying Little Big Planet is a bad game. I played it. I played a lot of it, and it's a blast. I love platformers. Don't get me wrong. I just don't, you know. And that's the thing, though. We, you know, let's just have fun with games instead of trying to find, you know, the next big thing. If something comes along that's innovative, great. You know what I'm saying? You know what? Let me. You know what? I want to ask you a question real quick. You ever read a review score? Now, we know like an 8 or a 9 is high, right? I've read so many reviews from IGN and shit where they give a game like an 8 or 9, but you read the actual review and they bash the holy fuck out of the game, but the review score is high.
I haven't encountered that sort of thing where the score doesn't coincide with the actual contents of the review. Have you?
Yep. Assassin's Creed. They gave Assassin's Creed a 7. Okay, that's pretty good, I guess, you know, in the review scale. But it sounded like it was a review of a game with like a 2. It was just nothing but negative. You know, but one thing I will say is, you know, one review that was very interesting, and I think it's interesting, it's just one review. It's not any of their other reviews. Go to Game Trailers and watch the Last Remnant review, because that is probably the strangest video game review I've seen in the mainstream, because they basically say the Last Remnant game is a hard game to review. They did give it a high score. They gave the last, because we all know how the Last Remnant did. It was so mixed, you know?
Right.
But the way they put it was, you will enjoy this game depending on your tolerance of certain issues. It's like they actually addressed that people will have tolerance for frame rate and texture popping issues, and some people don't. And that was simply just mind-boggling coming from a website like Game Trailers. You should watch that review because of the way it presents itself. It's completely different. I mean, they do have a score at the end, but it's the way the actual substance of the review presents itself, surprisingly different than anything else you've seen. And that's not just, you know, the other websites. That's all their stuff too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's all the stuff that Game Trailer reviewed. Like, you know, it's just, you get, well, what I'm saying is, you know, it's just a different review from any review I've ever seen. And it's not because it's Last Remnant, it's just because of the way they presented it. Could have been for anything else.
So basically what you're saying is that they kind of try to take into account that, well, if that's not really important to you, then maybe you'll like the game, kind of thing, in the actual text itself. Because technically, even though it's spoken, it's still text.
Right, right. And how many game sites, main, you know, like IGN, GameSpot, you know, any of those sites, 1UP, Game Trailers, have you seen do?
Honestly, not too much, but I might be because, like, I skim through reviews sometimes, you know? Like, I'll have to admit, I'm like, part of the problem here, because, like, when I look at reviews, I sometimes just go to the score and then read the descriptions. It should be the other way around. I should be reading the descriptions, then looking at the score, because that way I can actually catch them in the act of, like, you know, like, somehow messing up somehow, you know what I mean?
I see what you're saying. It's crazy with review scores. I think, I do agree, though, they do more harm than good, you know?
Not just to us, but I think also the publishers and the developers, too, because obviously it's a big sort of issue, because they want to be able to, it's a way, it's a publisher's way of knowing how good they've worked on the game. And it's a measure in which they can improve their company, which is right. Understandable. But it's also a terrible measure, because it also is dependent on the person who you're giving the game to review to. Yeah, like, I understand why on 1UP.com they're not going to give a Halo guy Final Fantasy to review, because obviously he's going to hate it. But at the same time, you don't give it to the guy who likes Final Fantasy, who will review it because he's probably a fanboy of the series, or he hates anything that's not innovative. Like, he wants Final Fantasy to be, like, perfect or something like that, you know, something along those lines. So I think in the end, we want to live without scores, but at the same time, we kind of have to live with them.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. That's an excellent point about the scores. The thing is, you know, the scores have also had controversy too over them. because we've had companies such as Eidos way back in the day, Acclaim, when they pull the bitch move. And the bitch move is when they, you know, the Jeff Gerstmann incident from a couple years back, the Acclaim incident with EGM way back in the day. Do you know about that with Total Recall, the game?
And there's also Ubisoft from EGM, if you remember, with Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, the Assassin's Creed. What did EGM give Assassin's Creed anyway?
I don't recall, but that's basically when Ubisoft just pulled their reviews.
Yeah, they pull the ads. They pull ads and shit like that. And that's the worst move you can do. I mean, I don't know why the publisher... See, that's my problem with review scores, too.
Yeah. Again, like I said, it's a way for a company to measure how well they did. And if it got a lower score, then they have to figure out how to fix it. And it's kind of a crazy thing, because... In that case, then it's not really scores aren't really a measure of fun, but it's a measure of quality. And if we're talking a measure of quality, then does that mean, you know, innovation and fun then? Because if a game is fun, it would be scored high. And if a game is innovative, then yes, it'll score high too. But usually if a game is innovative, it's automatically fun as well sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I don't see so many people, you know, it just seems like, and I reviewers aren't just guilty of this. Other gamers are too. You know, some other gamers. I'm not classifying everyone, but people just don't have fun with these games anymore. You know, they overanalyze everything. You know, everything has to be guns have to have perfect recoil. I mean, the shooters. You know what I'm saying? They have to have this and that, and it's just insane. My opinion is go by your instinct and make your own, play demos, rent the game, do whatever. But ultimately, just make your own opinion, because I don't think – we're also seeing more mixed reviews these days too. I forgot to bring that point up, don't you think?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot more mixed reviews these days on a lot of games. And it's just proving the fact that reviews aren't like what they used to. You can't really go buy them. I never even went buy them back in the day when they were, you know, universally agreed. So my thing is just make your own judgment on the game.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny you say that. Adam Sessler actually said that too when the old Wanna podcast was still happening. He said, go by your instinct. You know, don't just rely on reviews, because we're just here to kind of tell you, you know, what we personally found, you know, like noticed about the game. And we're not here to kind of tell you if you should buy it or not. We're just here to kind of tell you what we thought of it, you know.
But look and at so, it now.
And I think the moral of the story, the moral of this is, don't use the scores as a measure if you personally should buy the game. Use it as a measure of what potentially you could get out of it, because you can only know if you like a game based on whether or not you enjoyed it once it's finally in your hands.
And scores can also cause you to overhype shit too, because I always go into every game with a grain of salt. Every game, you know, I always have some sort of doubt about it, and I go in it with that, you know, so I don't get overly disappointed and I don't overhype it. Like, let's see, Grand Theft Auto 4, universally praised. I went in with a grain of salt. I have a grain of salt for Bioshock 2. Hell, I had a grain of salt for Bioshock 1. I wasn't expecting to enjoy that game as much as I did. I'm not saying I'm going to hate it. I'm just saying, you know, I just go in it with no expectations, really.
Or low expectations.
Not really low, just I'm like, it sounds cool, but, you know... We'll see how it works out, you know?
All right.
So, I mean, I don't go into hating the game immediately. One time I did, though. That was Gears of War 1. I didn't think I'd like that game. But I ended up loving the original Gears of War, and I love the second one. So.
Okay.
That's the moral of the story, I guess.
So let's go into the news for this week, then. So you got that ready?
Yes, we do. It's, The 6 days in Fallujah was pulled by Konami because it was deemed overly sensitive.
overly sensitive or they just don't want to deal with it. I would say that they just didn't want to deal with the issue of having to release the game.
You know what? I didn't really see that much flack for it.
Really?
I don't. Well, I did the video and then I didn't, you know, I didn't. I saw a lot. I've seen even soldiers support it.
As far as these games go, like, I kind of just saw them as shooters and stuff like that. And it's a way for Konami to kind of, like, penetrate the shooter market, which is a great idea. It's good. But it never really got too much interest from me as a gamer because I thought that, oh, it's probably going to be like a Call of Duty 4 clone to begin with. So I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I personally think that it's not a loss for me. So
it's not canned completely. Atomic Games is still working on it. It just Konami is not going to publish it though.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but Atomic, I don't know. I don't think it didn't bother me. It's just, I was thinking, when I did the video, I was thinking about, you know, soldiers and shit, because I don't really think a soldier who was in Iraq or in that actual battle would want to play that. You know, that might be a bit much for him. You know, I was thinking from that perspective, because, you know, you really don't want that, you know. If you're in something traumatized, you don't want to play a game on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's like if Vanessa's grandpa wanted to play, like, World War II or something like that. It's like, no, you don't hand, like, a World War II veteran, like, a World War II video game and say, look, you can shoot them again. And it's like, oh, no way. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah, like giving them Call of Duty World at War or something. Or Call of Duty 2. That's not cool, you know? But,
no, it's not.
But I don't know. Do you think Konami? Let me ask you this, Alex. Do you think Konami was being a pussy? Just put it bluntly.
That's what I'm getting, and that's the vibe I'm getting here. Because I mean, that's a lot of stuff to go through. I mean, you'd be pissing off a lot of like interest groups and stuff, and a lot of veterans too. But if, like you said, like if not a lot of people, not a lot of the, if some soldiers are even supporting it, I don't see how that's. That's bad. It's almost, the way that I kind of saw it is, it's kind of like when in World War II, when they had those propaganda, like, videos and stuff and commercials on TV and stuff that kind of, you know, say, like, you can go to war, you know, support the war effort and all that stuff. It's kind of like that. It's almost like the way that I see it is no different than the U.S. Army making a video game about the U.S. Army, which they have.
Okay. Yeah, they have. You're absolutely right. They made a game.
And with most forms of entertainment, you know, we call these things entertainment, but sometimes it's kind of like a propaganda for something. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but that's kind of like how I feel. And while I was fairly susceptible to, you know, Call of Duty 4's storyline and all that stuff, you know, it doesn't really necessarily make me want to join the war or wish that ever happened to me. It makes me realize how terrible it is. And I think that if you base a game on some real-life event, I think it just kind of heightens the importance of the event, I would say, and kind of makes it not look like a laughing matter. Sure, it's a video game, but if portrayed properly, then maybe it will tell like a side of a story that we've never seen before. Like, a good example is kind of like, you know, like in Call of Duty 4 and stuff like that. There's a lot of moments there where, you know, like, they're just so powerful. And God forbid, if you haven't played Call of Duty 4, there's a part there where your character literally dies from a nuclear
blast. Oh,
God,
yeah. That single-player experience was amazing. That game was.
Yeah.
That part was. The ending was powerful. The ending sequence.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you kind of, you know, there, it's not the deepest in character development, but it was enough to make you like your crew. And
right.
Certain bad stuff happens to those crew members, and it's just kind of upsetting. And you play through most of the game with these crew, even as the guy that does die, you know?
Yeah.
And you grew kind of attached to these supporting characters, and you see them all get kind of killed. In front of you at the end of the game, and I was like, "Oh my God, they killed they killed everyone, in the whole supporting cast of that fucking game."
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's the thing I was talking about. It's like, you know, the games are meant to evoke some sort of emotion to you a lot closer and a lot more in your face than something like a movie would. The only thing that I have to say is that make a responsible effort to try to portray it as humanly as possible.
Right.
And maybe on both ends of the spectrum even, you know?
But is there a line to draw on what you make games? Because what I want to talk about is, you know, we're talking about Fallujah, me and you don't think a big deal. But what about some of these indie games like Super Columbine RPG or, you know, what else? That JFK assassination game. What about those? Do you think those are a bit much?
Well, a lot of people have actually... Going back to it's actually called Super Columbine Massacre RPG.
Okay.
Jonathan Blow actually defended that game, which is really, really crazy. Jonathan Blow is the guy who created Braid.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because, you know, it's relevant to what we were talking about, you know? And what's interesting, too, is there's a documentary film about it, too, called Playing Columbine. But the thing is, you know... If within the next week or any downline down the line, I actually have the guts and go down and play, I'll let you know how it was. Because I'm not playing it for it to be fun, because I'm really hesitant to play it. I'm very, very hesitant because it happened too close to me. But if I do it by the time we record the next episode or by whenever, then, you know, I'll talk about it and tell you what it is, but I am extremely hesitant to even touch this game because of what it is. Now, the documentary is a different story, though.
Okay.
I would be willing to watch the documentary about the game.
Right.
Because that's a little bit different.
I think my personal thing here is really this. If as artists, and I'm talking about traditional artists and graphic artists, we have something called artistic responsibility as citizens of the world, citizens of the United States, and being a human being. The last thing that you want to kind of do is to try to kind of circumvent and try to rationalize that, you know, as human beings, it is okay to portray something in a much more positive light.
Right.
And again, I'm saying this because of my limited understanding of this game. I didn't really play it. I have no intentions of playing it, even if it is free. I am willing to kind of see like its moral ramifications and kind of like the way that it kind of portrays things like that. And people can make the argument that, well, you kill a lot of things in Call of Duty. You kill a lot of things they killed a lot of things in Black Hawk Down, the movie. And, you know, obviously in the Fallujah game, well, you're going to kill a lot of things there. But chances are, you know, in the Fallujah game, I don't think it's going to be like an accurate portrayal to begin with. So, again, we're just hearing anecdotes of two different games that are somewhat based in real life events and really like, you know, I think it depends on the context. If it's trying to do something with an unfortunate tragedy, then maybe, you know, you have to kind of handle it with a lot of sensitivity. Unfortunately for World War II, I don't think we've been too sensitive about that topic. I think the fact that we have been doing like a lot of World War II games doesn't do a great service to the men and women who fought in World War II.
Right.
And it sickens me that it's been being considered as like a cash cow for all these, you know, for all these companies, you know.
Yeah, that was like a genre in itself, World War II games. It wasn't goddamn just, oh, it's a game set in World War II. It was a fucking genre.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it. It's a genre.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really
sad because, again, it's a real life event. A lot of our grandmas and, you know, like relatives and brothers, sisters probably participated in that war, and we're playing it or like enjoying it, but do we really know the context behind it?
You know, I just hope we don't see games based on, you know, on, you know, I think the day that we'll finally really cross the line would be the day when we see Holocaust games and shit like that. I never want to see that. That I will, you know, that's just my personal opinion.
But you raise up some really interesting points though. And if anybody wants to add to the conversation, just, you know what to do. Just email us at tpppg@gamesn.me, and Magus and I will get it, and we'll read some of your responses for next week. How about that?
Exactly. And I say it's time, you know, this has been probably the most serious conversation, so let's lighten the mood with what do you think? Do you think we should?
Yeah, let's take a break first, because, you know, I want some people to actually kind of, you know, step out of their doorstep, take a breath of fresh air, and then come back in and listen to the rest of the podcast. How about that?
Yeah.
Because this next segment is going to be pretty funny.
Yeah, it's the douchebag of the week.
the name keeps changing, but okay.
The elitist fanboy quote of the week.
It changed again, but it's okay. We'll come back shortly.
Oh, man.
On the Review Club, we review from a different angle than most. We prefer not to ask whether a game is good because, let's face it, there'll always be somebody out there who'll appreciate the subtle complexities of Super Noah's Ark 3D. Instead, our Review Club asks, who's this game good for? We're a diverse group, and we can always be counted on some lively conversations. So check us out on iTunes or on our website at www.gamesn.me. All right, guys, did you guys get some nice fresh air? Because we're back, and this week's stupid elitist fanboy comment of the week goes to...
Hitman from Game Trailers. Today we're going to see a Persona fanboy, or a Shin Megami Tensei fanboy, I should say. Now, there's no backstory this time, he's just a fan fuck. That's all you need to know. So shall I just read the quote? All right. Maybe people are starting to realize how much better it is than Final Fantasy. Yup, I went there. Seriously, Megami Tensei games may not have all the fancy graphics and spiky hairs, but the story and gameplay mechanics are solid, and it's actually fun. Anyone who likes Final Fantasy do not understand JRPGs, and they are stupid. That's what he said.
What? That blows my mind, because I was a big fan of Final Fantasy before Shin Megami Tensei, and I have played like Persona, and I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to argue that the gameplay and the story is a lot better, and the graphics really don't make the game.
Yeah, I like both. You know, you got me into Shin Megami Tensei, but I still love Final Fantasy. I mean, I'm down with the Final Fantasy. But here's the problem I noticed with Shin Megami Tensei fan brats, okay? They think that it's, you know, it is a great series, don't get me wrong, in my opinion. But they think they're, you know, a lot more elite and a lot more cooler than the Final Fantasy fanboys, because they're you know, their franchise is on the down low. You know, it's not as well known, so, you know, it's... We like the obscure series. We're like, you know, indie fan fucks, you know? We like the obscure stuff. You guys are just mainstream whores. Okay. I mean, I'll be honest. I thought Persona 3, I don't know. Persona 3 kind of had some good production values to it.
Yeah, I mean, it was very snazzy. It was very snappy. Great music, although that's kind of an arguable point. But in Persona 4, they stepped it up, and you kind of saw that there was some production values in it. I mean, you know, it didn't have to be looking like a PS3 or Xbox 360 game to kind of know, like, hey, we got some style. And again, like, my personal thing with games is that there's presentation and then there's graphics. Now, the graphics on the Persona games, not the best ones. They are okay. But the presentation made up for it.
They're flashy as fuck. I mean, look.
Yeah.
They're, you know, when there's cutscenes, when there's a dramatic thing in Persona 3, I remember, you know, it'd show the character's face and a box just setting up and go, phew, or something like that. Or when you knock an enemy down, it has, you know, that little slideshow where it just shows all four characters just, you know, like in an anime style. thing come together and then they beat the fuck out of the guy, you know?
Right.
It's just, it's flashy, but that's what I'm saying, though, is that they think, you know, oh my, you know, it's kind of like the God Hand fanboys. You remember God Hand?
Yeah.
A lot of God Hand fanboys, like, you know, it got bad reviews. Well, did it get bad reviews, or?
Well, yeah, well, a lot of people complain. It was the same complaint as Order of Ecclesia. It was too hard.
Okay. They're like, oh, well, you know, we like real games. You know, they like make it this super manly game. And I'm like, well, you know, why don't you go play Ninja Gaiden for the NES and see how far you get in Act 6? Oh, God. But they're like, oh, well, you know, this is a super hard game. It's, you know, it's you know, only real gamers play these true games. Or it's the same thing as all these other gamers that, you know, play these super obscure Japanese games. Not saying there's anything wrong, because I do play super obscure Japanese games. Okay?
Uh-huh.
There's nothing wrong with that. But you know, just because they play it, they think they're, you know, they've got something above the mainstream gamers.
Yeah.
And that annoys the fuck out of me, because I enjoy mainstream games too.
Yeah, you know, Magus, we both like a lot of really similar games, except for music games, of course. But I'm kind of with you on this, because I am both a mainstream gamer and I'm also an indie gamer. I personally think I'm always trying to find a game that would bridge the gap between the indie and the mainstream. And that's why, you know, like, a lot of people say that Raid was so pretentious, but you know what? That bridged the gap between indie games and mainstream games. Now, granted that Jonathan Blow spent a ton of money on that game, you know, it still retained its indie flavor to me, and that's one thing that really appealed me to it. And personally, the Shin Megami Tensei games, I really liked them. I don't see why you should only play that game, though. Like, I am, like what we said before, like, I'm not the kind of guy that will only try, like, one specific game. Like, hell, like, the last Pokemon game I played was Red and Blue, and then I bought Platinum.
Right.
And the reason why I bought Platinum was because I, you know, like, I wanted to see, like, if it actually grew up and stuff, if it actually improved over the past few years and stuff, you know? Because, I mean, I'm just that kind of person. So, and of course, you know, when I realized that there was not really too much that's changed, or, you know, like, it would take me a while, well, you know, obviously, like, my interest peters off. But it doesn't occur to me that to actually not recommend the game for other, you know, for other people, you know? That's my personal thing, is like, if I don't like it, I'm pretty sure somebody else will. And, you know, I'll point out, like, the good aspects of it. I'm going to be okay with it, you know?
Exactly.
But as far as, you know, just sticking with, just by saying, like, oh, well, you know, finally those Final Fantasy fanboys, no good story. Well, has it, you know, arguing for the point of other Shin Megami Tensei, you know, fanboys, well, do you really want to have mainstream appeal for Shin Megami Tensei games? Because guess what? If your logic is to be true, then if they get a lot more people like selling, buying games like in the millions, you're going to lose that same independent feel that you've always known for Shin Megami Tensei games. And guess what? You're going to be part of everybody else.
And you know,
so you're not as cool anymore.
And you know who has a tendency to do this too? Final Fantasy fanboys.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy fanboys, they, you know, the hardcore ones like to quote, oh, I like 5 the best. It's way better than 7. You know, they'll choose the less popular games over the, you know, like 7, you know. Or they'll,
right.
the one game, and this, I'll be honest, Final Fantasy 6 is my favorite Final Fantasy game. But that's just a matter of preference, though. But but you know, when you get into the classic old, you know, the Final Fantasy VII is the best game ever argument type thing, you know. You get, you know, all these guys who go, well, 6 was way better. You know, Kefka's better than Sephiroth. It's more elite. And they think they're more elite because it's lesser known. But Final Fantasy VI, I have found, is not that less known. It is, I think it's probably the second most popular game, maybe. Maybe 10 is a little bit more popular than that, though, because people still talk about 10 a lot.
10, 7, 6, and 4 are the most well-known of all the Final Fantasies. I would have to say. That's my personal experience with it. Because a lot of people... Because, I mean, you can argue 11, but not really.
9 has a... 9 6... fanboys aren't that bad, I've noticed, too.
Yeah. Because, what can they complain about? 9 to me felt was an homage to all the other Final Fantasies before it. Which, by the way, is not bad. And it actually is very old school, you know?
I like 9 a lot. 9's my second favorite, actually. I think Final Fantasy VII. No, Tactics is my third favorite Final Fantasy game. But that's... And then 7's like fourth. But I like 7 a lot. But that's beside the point, though. Final Fantasy fanboys do it. It's crazy. Yeah. They do the same exact thing, and then to an even extent too. Not only Shin Megami Tensei, but then you've got people who, you know, you've got I've seen Skies of Arcadia fanboys. I've seen Lunar fanboys, and they, mind you, they're still around. They're not as big as some of these other groups. You got Sakoden fanboys. You know, other JRPGs are not as well known as Final Fantasy, and even to a lesser, greater extent, maybe even Dragon Quest fanboys.
Right.
And they're like, oh, well, you know, because out of all the JRPGs, Final Fantasy is the most well-known mainstream JRPG series out there.
Which is naturally the target, because it's the most popular.
Yeah, and I don't see, you know, a lot of mainstream games, it's the same thing with people who attack Halo. Halo is fun. It's just fun. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think it has the best story in any game, but it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun to, you know, I know it's the same argument. And then Call of Duty fanboys seem to think this too, but what's funny is Call of Duty is more played than Halo, but they think it's more, you know, lesser known than Halo for some reason, which makes no sense to me. Call of Duty is more played on Xbox Live, I think World at War is the number one game, than Halo 3. Yeah. But they're like, oh, well, Call of Duty is more, you know, it's not as well known as... What the fuck are you talking about? Look at Call of Duty 4! Oh my god, are you that retarded? That game beat out Halo 3 the year Halo 3 came out. And Halo 3, a lot of people were predicting that game to be the number one Xbox Live played their game. Are you that stupid? Wow. I don't know. The logic behind these fanboys make no sense. But that's the comment for tonight. You got any...
That's why we feature them on the stupid elitist fanboy comment of the week, is so that we can kind of, you know, prove them wrong, you know?
I prefer to say rip them to fucking shreds, but... but
okay,
I love Persona 3, but the fanboys are annoying me. But I don't, you know, I'm not one of those guys who will say, oh, well, I hate the game because of the fanboys.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's people who hate Final Fantasy VII for the fanboys. I never understood that logic either.
That's also a problem.
Yeah, because there are people who hate games based on there's people who hate Halo because of the fanboys. Just based on the fucking fanboys.
Yeah.
But I think that's it for the comment, though, for that.
Yeah, I think this has gone on way too long than expected. So let's wrap. So I think we've got like a pretty crazy episode, dude. I mean, this is like we've gone from like really high highs to really low lows and all the way back up to high. This is pretty amazing. This is like just a proof of like how amazing, like, you know, like we've gotten like in the video game industry, that we can actually like be very like expressive about what we think about this.
I mean, we go from, you know, talking about Link's sex life to, you know, RPGs about Columbine and then crazy fanboys. What else could you ask for?
Yeah, exactly. Tell me about it. So, all right, man. Well, I think I'm going to go and make something to eat with my personal trainer cooking. And you want to send us off to next week?
And
dude?
Yeah, with that, Magus and Alex out.